morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I am Sarah Dixon, and I have been a member here at the Youth Fellowship for about 18 years, along with my husband Matt. And we raised three children in this fellowship. Noah, who's 23 and up in Minneapolis, working, and Sky, who is 21 and a senior in college, is going into social work, and our youngest, Xavier, is at UW-Milwaukee, studying film production. So, although we have been members for 18 years, I will self-admit that post-COVID, my attendance and involvement has really dropped off. But it is really good to be back here and see all of them and see your faces. So, I am also a high school teacher at the high school in town for about 12 years now. And this summer, I had the opportunity, applied to be with an organization, a nonprofit organization called Genocide Education Project, and was awarded a teacher fellowship, one of 15 teachers from around the country. And we went to Armenia for 2 weeks this summer to study the Armenian genocide and learn more about the culture and current issues going on there. So that's what I'm going to talk about today, but I want to also kind of frame, so I'll have to give a little bit of history about the genocide, but I also want to give a broader picture of how this plays a role in world history, current issues, and just why it's important to learn about these events, even though there's so many tragedies in the world. And I often tell my students that we can't know about every single tragedy in the world. I mean, I don't think that as humans we were equipped. We were never meant to know every single thing that happens. And now it becomes harder to know where that limit is. But I really feel it's important to like really dig into some of them, and because there's some common threads in that, patterns that you can find, and also at least, you know, certain you're paying witness to these events that happened and making connections. And also, even though they're tragedies, they can really be inspiring to see the resilience of humanity throughout our world history. At the high school, I teach world history, geography, and government classes, and service learning classes also. So, and my disclaimer about the Armenian history is, so I studied it quite a bit then, this spring and summer, and but I'm not an expert in, and there are so many nuances and complexity with the geopolitical situation in the Caucasus, but I know from my studies, but I'm not an expert in it. So I hope to leave some time at the end for some questions. And so I want to kind of split it up between a little bit about the topic, why I was chosen. So the Armenian genocide happened during World War I, and it's really breezed over in history, much because there's been a very focused campaign by the Turkish government to not recognize this as a genocide, and just other deaths that happened in World War I. So there's a very active Armenian American community in the U.S. on the coast, and they really want to bring light to this because they know it's been overlooked, and that there are patterns there that started with that were copied and enhanced with the Holocaust in World War II. And also the plight of Armenians now as this very small country, and with their their ethnicity and their culture is continues to be on the verge of being wiped out. So, and events that happened in September brought that to light even more, that this, that they feel like the genocide isn't done and that the world has overlooked them. So first of all, a little geography lesson. Where is Armenia? Because there was a lot of people when I said, I'm going to Armenia, they were like, they thought I was going to Albania. They were like, oh, you know, so. And granted, I mean, it's a small geographical country. So on that, you can see where Turkey is, Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia, kind of right there in the middle of those big power players of Russia, Iran, and Turkey. That's the Armenian flag there. I'm going to give a little bit of a background about the genocide. So this part will be like five, seven minutes to kind of give you like the timeline and overview. And then afterwards, I'll try to put it into larger context and what happened when we were on this trip. So, historically, Armenia has been a country, has been a nation or a kingdom dating back to the first century, so about 2,000 years. And the red line there, you can see that's the historic Armenia nation and kingdom, where the culture and their language, and they have their own language, they have their own alphabet, some really unique aspects. And then the red, you can see the small red country, that's the current country of Armenia. So that's kind of, oh, and this is a photo of 15 teachers, 14 different states. I believe there's two people from Massachusetts. But otherwise, the purpose of Genocide Education Project is to bring more awareness about genocides that have happened in the world, and so trying to spread out the information with teachers around the country so that we will bring it back to our classrooms and our populations to raise some understanding of it. So some of the unique things about Armenia is that it was the first nation in the world to adopt, officially adopt Christianity back in 300 before the Byzantine Empire and the Roman Empire allowed it. And they are very proud of this. One of the things that we did on our trip is in the morning we would have classes in the, there's a genocide museum there, so we'd have classes, we'd have speakers, we'd have descendants of survivors, and then in the afternoons they would take us on like field trips in the area. And so this is a photo of a rock church. It was built into the mountainside. It's from the 600s, I believe, and then dug down into it. And so when you, so the second picture is, we were below the ground, and then there was some singers there that every hour they do a little 7-minute song to kind of give you that sense of what it was like hundreds of years ago in Armenia. This is an outward photo of one of the monasteries there, and then in the background is Mount Ararat. And Mount Ararat, according to Christian, the Christianity story is that Mount Ararat is the mountain that Noah landed on. And so it's really important to Armenian history. For them, it's actually across the border, and that's in Turkey now. So the border was about half a mile in between this monastery and Mount Ararat. But it's still kind of a very strong geographical symbol for their country. So this is the little history part. Okay, so I'm going to take you through a little timeline, and I like having the, you know, for visual learners, they can see it up there. So brief history, Ottoman Empire, 700 years in history. It was a huge, powerful empire in the world. As you can see, the where current Turkey is and then where the Ottoman Empire was for all those years. And when I teach about this in my world history classes, the Ottoman Empire, and in the past, I was always like kind of focusing on the 1300s and 1400s when they were this really powerful place, and they were like, at that time, they were considered very religiously tolerant because the Ottoman Empire was Muslim, but they allowed, there was no forced conversion, they allowed Christians and Jewish people to live in the Ottoman Empire to practice their religion. They did have to pay an extra tax because they couldn't serve in the military, but other than that, they were considered people of the book with the Old Testament and the New Testament as aspects of the, you know, following this similar prophets and so on. So they felt like there was this connection, and lots of other places in the world, Christians had kicked out Jewish people, and like in the Spanish Inquisition during this time, a lot of them fled to the Ottoman Empire because there they could practice religion freely. So in the Ottoman Empire, they had these smaller enclaves called millets, and that was where kind of an ethnic minority or religious minority might live in a community together, and they were given some aspects of self-rule. So this was pretty good, like 1300s, 1400s, I'm always like, go Ottoman Empire, like, look at this. And, so ahead of the time. But it didn't last. They didn't keep on staying ahead of the time with religious tolerance. In the 1800s, this huge empire is starting to fall apart. And there's these smaller areas like Greece and Serbia that are breaking away. So they're having rebellions and they're having wars, and they're not industrializing like Western Britain had, Russia had. So they are, they're weak now. The nickname is the sick man of Europe, and they lost this this powerful part in the world. So a sultan, kind of the first time this term demographic engineering comes to play, that he decides that part of it is because they are ethnically diverse. And so there's a protest in one of the millets where Armenians live. Again, Armenians are Christian. And he puts it down with force, and they think about 100,000 people were killed. So that's kind of the beginning, and they start this idea of, demographic engineering sounds a lot like ethnic cleansing, and then the term genocide didn't exist yet at that point, but it will come in later. So then there's this group called the Young Turks, and the Young Turks are more like inspired by like Enlightenment ideas and constitutions and so on, and they want to modernize, and they're like, we're not industrialized, and we can't just keep on putting down these rebellions. We need to, if we offer a constitutional monarchy, people will stay in our empire. So they overthrow the sultan, and this is the part where, like, I think it's like a key, like I try to, like with my students, like at this key moment in history, it could have gone different ways. And this group who has had all these high ideals, this political party called the Young Turks, when they take over, it's not as easy as they think, and people keep on rebelling, and areas are trying to break off from the empire still. And so that political party gets taken over by people who are like, the heterogeneous thing isn't working, being tolerant is not working, what we need to do is become Turkish, and we're going to burn down and control or get rid of any rebellions from other people. We're going to become cultural nationalists. And so that political party had these like great kind of enlightened constitutional thinkers, but they became the minority in the party, and the and they kind of go forth with this idea of engineering, what do I call it, demographic engineering. And then very quickly, World War I happens. Ottoman Empire does not really have a part in the original fight between Russia and Serbia. But they have been, they've had wars on their border with Russia, and so Germany says, join us, and then when we win, you can get some of your area back. So this, so Ottoman Empire joins on the side of Germany and Austria, and Armenians sign up. They're still feeling like we're part of the Ottoman Empire, and they sign up, you know, showing their loyalty. We've seen that pattern before with groups when the country goes to war, and they are part of the war effort. Still not allowed to be soldiers, but they're part of the war effort. And then this also, I feel like this is like this key moment in history where one individual made, in this case, like a horrible change in the path of this group. They had a battle with Russia, and it was in the winter, and like, I haven't learned, right, like, never go to war with Russia in the winter. Everyone always loses. So they lost this big battle, and during this battle, the officer is, and Armenians, like, you know, the Armenians were the workers, they were the bringing the supplies and doing everything, and he was like, I'll go back and I'll, you know, say how much you were part of us and fighting for this and feeling this camaraderie. Something happens with this guy because he goes back to the capital and he decides to use the Armenians as a scapegoat. And again, like, that's a pattern in history we see all the time, finding a minority group to use as a scapegoat. And so he says, the reason we lost is because the Armenians were traitors. And the background is Armenian, like the Armenian religion, they're more Orthodox Christians, so they aligned religiously closer with Russia. And so there was a little bit of suspicion that they were had some historic ties with Russia. So he writes this article, calls the Armenians traitors, and then a lot of the people in the Ottoman Empire, they were not literate. And so the article gets taken to the towns and read. And so the population absorbs that. And that's also like, how do you convince the people to start to think of another group as other and to hate that group? And this, I think, was this key event. He used this idea that they lost this battle because of the Armenians, and that was spread throughout the empire. And that is going to really take away a lot of like empathy towards Armenians and thinking like we're in time of war, we must do whatever it takes to get rid of them. And that is the beginning, that's where the genocide starts. So the genocide starts in 1915. The population, the Sultan rounds up the intellectuals, the leaders, the professors, and just executes them, like they're all like the leaders of the communities. And that is known as the beginning of, it's called Armenian Genocide Remembrance Day, April 14, 1915. And then they start deporting people and taking over their property in the Ottoman Empire. So this is just a map. It's got, you've got some, when we were at this at the museum, they were really into let's show you primary sources, let's show you that this really happened, because they have spent 100 years convincing the rest of the world that this really was a genocide. And actually last year, President Biden was the first US president that recognized it as a genocide, because that's got all sorts of like political weight to it with Turkey being our ally. But he finally made that last move. There's plenty of other countries in the world that have done that, but the United States joined in with that last year. So they, this is a little picture of a museum, and they would have photographs and letters and reports from the ambassadors and all sorts of primary documents to make sure that this wasn't just a story that had been told, but anyone doing research could prove that this really was a genocide. So we went through, these are some photos of the people that had been killed on that first day, called Red Sunday. Some of the leaders of the Armenian community. So I won't get into too much of like the details of the genocide, but like albeit like obviously like it was horrible. About the deportations were a death march to the Syrian desert. So that's what they would call it. And like why? And the Turkish government's point of view was that it wasn't a genocide. They were just deporting them to these places that they, in some letters, called concentration camps. So it's the first time that term is used. And the Germans are part of this. So this is, you know, whatever, 25 years before World War II is going to break out. But after a year, you can see reports that of the 2 million people who live, Armenians who lived in the Ottoman Empire, in the end, the number that's usually given is about 1.5 that were killed or died eventually, but and this was the German Chancellor's report of 1.2 million were dead. They do have some evidence. There was a German officer who ignored all the restrictions about taking pictures, and so he took photos, and those photos got snuck back. And the museum has those photos also to back up as some of the evidence. So the end of the war happens, and there are the leaders flee. Most of the Armenians are gone from the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire is disassembled. It's brought down to just the country of Turkey. There's this whole other interesting chapter to it where they Armenians in exile, actually a bookkeeper in New Jersey was in charge of it, tracking down the leaders of the genocide that were in exile, and a few of them were killed, were assassinated, and then the trials that erupted across Europe, the killers were actually, they were not found guilty. And so the trials brought a lot of the evidence of what had happened with the genocide. But most Armenians, some that were in the Ottoman Empire, they escaped to France and the United States for big places, and then other areas in the Middle East. So this is, like I had shown this one before, but this is just to see, like, that's historic Armenia. So the part in the green, almost no Armenians live there, and their churches, their books, their manuscripts burned down, destroyed, kind of that. And that's another aspect of genocide, is to get rid of the culture and the history of a group, not just the people. So people who live in, then the country of Armenia exists for the first time. When the Ottoman Empire is destroyed. And then this kind of shows the population where Armenians used to live, is that all in orange, and then where it's the dark red and the dark pink is where Armenians live now. And you can kind of see it there, the whole country of Azerbaijan, and there is a big there was, until September, a large population of Armenians that lived in Azerbaijan, which was a point of contention in the last 20 years. So it's really, really shrunk down, as you can see. I'm not going to go into too much detail about this part, just albeit they become an independent country, but then they get taken over by the Soviet Union. And so they live as part of the Soviet Union, and then they're the first country to ask for its independence from the Soviet Union is falling apart in 1991. And that's kind of, so they become an independent country again in 1991. So that's the history part there. If you want to know more about it, I'd be glad to, but I don't want to get too much into the weeds of that. Here's a photo of the memorial. So they have an eternal flame there. And some of our group laid flowers by it. This is the distance of the memorial from a distance and would be over the capital city of Yerevan. And that is one of our other field trips to an important battle site where the Turkey had invaded and tried to take over again, and they were able to stop them here. So that's kind of the border with Turkey and Armenia in the present day. And that is their statue called Mother Armenia, who is facing Turkey. It used to be a statue of Stalin during the Soviet era, and then soon after they put up this fierce-looking woman looking out at Turkey, which, because that's how they feel. They feel like they could be under attack at any moment. And that's kind of seen with, starting 3 years ago, there was a war with Azerbaijan. So that enclave called the Republic of Artsakh, and it's kind of that strike area there. So that's where there was, it's Armenians that lived there. But in the dividing up of the country after the Soviet Union fell apart, that part gets put into Azerbaijan. And in 2020, there was a war between Azerbaijan and Armenia over that area, trying to allow that area had been self-ruled since the 90s, and it ended with a stalemate. It was really powerful to go to a cemetery there and see 5,000 graves of people who were killed in 2020, and see their, they had the full-blown color picture of the people there. I don't want to call them kids because they were mostly 19 and 20 years old, so they're all born the same year that my kid was born, 2000, and 5,000 of them had died. It was about 5% of the population of the capital. And our tour guide, a young woman who is 28 now, she was just so angry that women weren't allowed to serve. Her brother lost friends. And she is just that mentality of current Armenians, like ready, like they have to be ready all the time to defend their land or to from their neighbors. She was like, I will not be put down again. Like, I will join next time. And in fact, they had changed the rules so women were allowed to join and fight now. Just that attitude of like I will never leave Armenia because they need me. They need me to always be here. And it just reminded me of that statue of Mother Armenia. That's what they live with, their culture on the verge of being wiped out. And then what happened in September, and it made the news here a bit, but there's so many different international things going on. So Artsakh is that republic that's technically in Azerbaijan that has had self-rule because it is 120,000 Armenians that live in this area. connected by one road into Armenia. The Azerbaijan decided to be done with allowing them to have self-rule. And so there was an attack and battles that took place in September. And the people of Artsakh, the Armenians, lost. And Azerbaijan said that they could stay, but they would have to, you know, live under their rule, which they didn't trust because there was, you know, there had been killings and so on. So they started a mass exodus in September of going to Armenia. About 100,000 of the 120,000 have left now. So Azerbaijan won, and that area that's historic and has these historic cultural elements to it is kind of the end of things there. These are some photos just from September of people leaving the area and becoming refugees now in Armenia. So the leaders of the group have been arrested, haven't been seen. So that's kind of the current things. And along with this, it's not the human tragedy is one thing, but there's also this element of the culture being destroyed. This is in part of the museum, they restore manuscripts. So there's some Akkadian manuscripts from like the 1200s that they have there. A lot of these books were burned, but some were hidden and taken out of Armenia during the genocide, and that's a photo of somebody doing a reclamation project with an old one of the old manuscripts. And kind of also the connection to, like, if we, again, like, we can't pay attention and know all the details to every tragedy that has ever happened in human history, but this one being breezed over. This is a quote that is, it was secondhand, but it was somebody who was at one of Hitler's speeches in 1939, where he was reported to have said this as they were entering into their policies of the Holocaust. And so obviously, like, there's a strong connection to that, not noticing the pattern, not picking up on it early on, and what can happen. And I also, so in my classes, I will teach about the history a little bit, like kind of briefly within the terms of World War I, but what I'm planning on starting now in my geography class, because our geography class is human geography, it's not just like physical geography, is a unit on genocide in general. And the patterns of genocide, the stages of the genocide, so that, and then we can do a couple of case studies of the past to see where this has been, and then also to recognize where it's happening today, because it isn't over. So that has been a way that I feel like, okay, that's something productive can do, is to try to teach this next generation to be able to recognize this, the dehumanization that can happen to people. And then also understanding, like, to me, it's important to understand the why and not just say, because some people are evil and so it just happens, but to notice it early on, like those early patterns of people didn't know that the man just made up this story about Armenians being traitors in a battle, and that started this spiral of thinking of them as others, and that they were the enemy that they had to watch out for. So sometimes that ignorance that can happen is there. That's in case anybody was like, what is a genocide? Because a genocide doesn't just have to be the killing, trying to wipe out of people. It can also be things that, like wiping out a culture, not stealing the children, and which had happened during the Armenian genocide, stealing the children and then raising them into it, without, you know, not allowing their language and their culture and their religion to be practiced, changing their name, these sorts of things. So, because I think actually right now the United Nations has declared that what China is doing to the Uyghurs is a genocide, because of the policies that they've done. So, again, they're trying to always have like some sort of like, especially because I'm working with teenagers and they can take the weight of the world on their shoulders and get really down about it. So I'm always cognizant of trying to make sure that they see the importance of this, and it's not just to burden them with another tragedy that happened before they were born, but that, like, being critical thinkers, you can pick up on these patterns, you can see it around you, and that, you know, asking, like, the questions why things happen and not just accepting that they have. And also that there's this amazing resilience of the human spirit that we can see through these, with the survivors of the Armenian genocide that are keeping their culture alive in the United States and back in Armenia. And also, so my last thing is I try to tell them is that it like the world history, it seems like it's getting better. Like, I'm always like the rights of people that will not, you know, keep growing bigger. And we keep having these horrible, tragic events. But still, like, I'd like to end, I always like try to end my classes, you know, at the end of the year or something, with this idea that, this quote of Martin Luther King's, that it does bend towards justice. There are groups, more and more groups keep getting their rights. We have things like war crimes, we have tribunals, we have ways of trying to rectify injustices, and the Armenian one is one that now I feel very passionate about because it got overlooked for so long. So, all right.